It's bedding, Jim, but not as we know it.
This is Big.
And welcome to the Bookie Bashing weekly bashcast, brought to you by bookiebashing.net. This is Big, looking at next week's opportunities and last week's profits. This is Bashcast episode number 98. It's 9:27 p.m. on Friday the 6th of April. Late one for me. I'm normally in bed by this time. I normally do the Bashcast. Last few have been on a Thursday afternoon. But the Masters like teed off at 1:30 on the Thursday, and then after that I just needed to lie down in a darkened room. Actually, it was sunny for the first time since 2004, so I went out in the garden and just I deliberately left my phone and my iPad and my Apple Watch and my Mac inside. Goal. Well, that's a useful goal. That is a big goal. Forget the nonsense of me leaving everything inside. I don't usually do the Bashcast on a Friday night. There is sport on. And I'm watching Deportivo versus Malaga in the background. And I wanted Deportivo to score. And they did. Which is great news for me, actually. As I put my phones on silent, because I've forgotten to do that, because I'm a bit all over the place tonight. Good goal by Deportivo. So what's happened here? I can't believe this was up all day, but it was. This one was crazy, right? Saint-Étienne, it was a Saint-Étienne Steam all-day thing. And following the Steamers on Betfair is one strategy, but for some reason the Sky Traders were asleep today. So really early in the morning, this morning when I woke up. So I woke up at 6, went to CrossFit this morning, came home and did the scrapes. Oh yeah, I was looking after Sasha for a couple of hours, so I didn't get the scrapes up until 9 o'clock in the morning, I think. When was it? No, later. I got the scrapes up for the first time this morning. 9:49. But they were already... The Saint-Étienne had already come in. So they were 12.5 last night. They'd come in to 12, 11, 10, 9. By the time they went off, they were 8. I'm not quite sure what they were at 9 in the morning. But all the... In the big enhanced accumulators over at Sky were value. So get this, right? Saint-Étienne Deportivo Cardiff was 81.69. Saint-Étienne Deportivo Wolves was 67.61. Saint-Étienne Malaga Cardiff 151.140. So okay, Saint-Étienne is the one providing all of the value there. So we're just going to hope that the other two games are not draws. Well, this is Saint-Étienne are winning. Unbelievable. In fact, oh dear me, there's the equaliser from Malaga just to ruin this story. From nothing as well, so that's 2-2. So Saint-Étienne are beating Paris Saint-Germain 1-0. So I could have either Wolves or Cardiff as long as it's not a draw. Well, Wolves are winning that one with 5 minutes to go. So I just needed Deportivo to win. Well, they went ahead 2-1, but it's now 2-2 in the background here, which is really frustrating. Great goal. So I've mentioned this before about French football, and this is a theory we're running with. One of a number of different... So the first theory is follow the smart money, because the smart money knows something. Whoever it was that was backing Saint-Étienne in from 12.5 looking at their graph to 10.5, they knew something. Paris had been matched as low as 1.17 for this game. 1.17 they were backed as low as. Saint-Étienne A little bit of money went at 14.5. Nothing significant, but money did go at 13.5, 11. A lot of money at 10. They went off at 8. So someone knew something. And the thing about French football is it's very... I don't have any stats on this. I need to dig some out. But it's very booking happy. There tends to be a lot of feistiness in French football. First half alone, I'm looking at 30th minute, yellow card, PSG. 41st minute, red card, PSG. And then three more yellow cards for PSG between the 41st minute and the 45th minute. So PSG are down to 10 men. And that's such a leveller. When it's an outsider versus a favourite, when they go down to 10 men. Which kind of suggests that big outsiders shouldn't be as big in League One as in other. As Deportivo come forward, goal has to be. Oh, he's hit the defender in the face! As Alan Partridge would say, he has hit him in the face. With his foot kick. So perhaps outsiders are overpriced over in France because of the fact that there are more red cards and red cards can be levelers. I don't know. It's just a theory. So Saint-Étienne are beating Paris 1-0 in the 90th minute. So I'm going to profit from that just from backing Saint-Étienne because I followed the smart money in there. Wolves are beating Cardiff in the 88th minute. So this 66-1 that was on at Skybet is reliant on Deportivo, who are 2-2 against Malaga in the 75th minute. Although, here they go. Here they go. Oh, it's going to be a lot of that in the next 15 minutes. It's a good week last week. In week number episode 98 of the Bashcast. What happened? Well, apart, we'll come to the golf in a bit. Let's part the golf for now. Which I don't even know. Yeah, no, I do know it is fun, the golf. By the way, it's live just now. What's happening over in Augusta? McIlroy's one off the lead. Woods isn't going to win. Here's Charlie Hoffman for birdie. I have nothing on Hoffman, so I don't want this to go in. It does. We'll come back to golf. Get Deportivo back on for the last 15 minutes. So, I was 40 on the weekend. Which was interesting. Jen took me to... We ditched Sasha with my parents. Jen took me to Bordeaux for lunch. I didn't know... It was like a surprise. So, I sort of blocked out all information at the airport and... made it all the way there without knowing where I was. I had my headphones on. I fell asleep on the plane, so I didn't even know how long we'd been flying. So like, we landed there. I tried to figure out where I was just based on the clues. The first thing I see is French writing. So I'm like, well, it's either France or Belgium, I think, unless I'm wrong, or nowhere else in Europe speaks French. But it didn't seem like Belgian Flemish. It was like French. So I was like, okay, we're in France, I'm pretty sure. So I when we walked past one of the terminals, I saw screens with outward flights and the screen said Bordeaux, so I thought they were flights to Bordeaux, so I was like, well, that's where we're not. And then I tried to list like every other French city I could think of and I dismissed where I actually was straight away. So yeah, I was in Bordeaux for the weekend, so I missed most of Saturday, so I'm not going to look at Saturday. Sunday, 1st of April, with the help of some pals. I was on DDHH. I was on it whilst I was on the plane. I sort of landed to find that I was on it. So I was on Aubameyang for Arsenal against Stoke City. Unbelievable, by the way. Paris Saint-Germain equalised in the 93rd minute. Excuse me. That's such a downer. It really is. £4,964 traded on Saint-Étienne at 1.04. So he couldn't have just held on. Oh, well, I greened out in that game, but still. means that the Deportivo match no longer matters. So yeah, Arsenal were playing Stoke City. Arsenal, who have been on a bad run of form, but Stoke are second bottom in the Premiership. 27 points from 32 games so far. So Arsenal hosted Stoke. I was looking at the market. Stoke went off at like 14, but then in the first 10 minutes had a number of chances and came all the way down to 8. But Arsenal held on 0-0 at half time, and then Aubameyang was 3.75. He was 11-4 in shop and online all Saturday. Came in from 4.7 all the way down to 4 on the exchanges. Cut online to 3.25. Still available at 3.75 in shop. Got a goal in the 75th minute. Actually, it was a penalty. Got double delight in the 86th minute. And then there was a penalty in the 89th minute. Why did Lacazette take that? Why did Lacazette take that? What does this article say? He came on as a substitute. I don't know. But it was annoying. Because that would have been big profits. I mean, it was still decent. We got the double delight. So that was the first of two. Aubameyang, the favourite in that game. And then Chelsea were playing Spurs. There was no DD pre-match, but there was DD in play. Not massive value. Morata was 6 to back, 7 to lay. It's probably like neutral EV. If it's on either side, it's possibly just flirting on the positive expectation side. But it's not massive. So whilst I was massive on Aubameyang, it was nowhere near as big on Morata, like a tenth of the stake. But he got the goal in the 30th minute. Didn't get double delight. In fact, Chelsea didn't even win the game. Spurs scored 3 goals. Eriksen and Ali got 2. So they won that 3-1. But it was a very decent day of double delight. There was also an over 2.5 double, 3.5 to back, 3 to Leo Vegas. Following day, which was it Easter Monday the next day? Or was it the week after Easter Monday? Whatever it was. Yeah, it must have been Easter Monday because it was like a full, it was the 2nd of April and there was a full league schedule. Which messed with the coupons in the shop, by the way, because it just spread out the teams, meaning that you didn't have this sort of instantaneous price crashing of team news where you can catch the bookies out. So it messed with a lot of value. But Luton, Accrington and Wickham was 7 to back, 6.4 to lay, just as a cheeky sort of League 2 treble. That one came in. But then we came to Wednesday night. Wednesday night was a night that you kind of dreamed of. Sorry, Tuesday night in the Champions League. Juventus were playing Real Madrid. Sevilla were playing Bayern Munich. The day started with steams for Real and Bayern. So when all of the places had posted up, all of the bookmakers had posted up their enhanced accumulators, they were just massive value from the beginning of the day, right? So we had 7.5 to back 6.5 to lay Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Aston Villa at Coral. We had Villa, Fulham, Real Madrid, Wolves at Vernon's. We had Villa, Fulham, Birmingham at Ladbrokes. And we had Bayern and Real, just the Champions League favourite double at Betfred. He did put it up at 4-1 at like 9 o'clock in the morning. It was 4.1 to lay, so it was huge. And then he took it down like half an hour later. It was available in shop till about 11:30, and then he took it down in shop as well. Put it back up at 3-1, which wasn't value. It was just too good. So Bayern won that 2-1 against Sevilla. Jesus Navas got an own goal for Bayern and Alcantara got the other goal. Sevilla did go ahead in that, but Bayern did win it. And Juventus lost 3-0 at home to Real Madrid. Dybala being sent off, Ronaldo getting double delight. 3-1 to back. 5.0 to lay. Make of that what you will. Marcelo got the 3rd. So everything comes in there. So it's just been, it's yet again, this role, we're just winning all of these value enhancements recently, but then we had such a losing run before. So long term, we're still pretty much on EV. We just had a massive losing run for like 400 odd bets. There's the graph. 351 bets since the beginning of the season, really. We'd made nothing. And then we've had two huge spikes in the last 150-odd bets. But we're just winning just now. But I think long-term, because we've got to use these profits to pay for the next losing run, which will only just be around the corner. We have more losing runs than we do winning runs because we're not betting at even money. We're betting at higher odds. So we're going to lose the majority of the time, but when we win, we're paying for these losing runs. So we've been running really hot. We've been making profit. We're above EV for the last 500 bets again, just for the first time in those 500 bets. So the bankroll that we had the analogy before, remember? So the money that you've got, imagine this, follow me on this journey. Let's say you've got £10,000 and that's your bankroll. It's not for the electricity bills. It's not for your holiday. It's not for the car. It's not to pay for the kids' school education. It's not to take your mistress away and keep her happy. It's your bashing bankroll, your gambling bankroll. Now, you could withdraw from it if you wanted to. I think just leave it there and let it grow. Let it compound. But when we have these long losing runs, the emotional attachment that we get to losing money is very negative. And to get over that, I've said it before, and I just want to sort of come back to it. One way of dealing with this is imagine, as Deportivo go 3-2 up, so that late minute equaliser for Paris is now really going to sting. But that's okay, because I'm going to imagine my bankroll, my £10,000, pro rata this to whatever your bankroll is. So if it's 5,000, just half these numbers, and if it's 20,000, double, blah, blah. So of that £10,000, the bottom of that, probably the bottom half, maybe 60%, that's concrete. It's the concrete foundation of my gambling bankroll, right? And then the next quarter, 25%, is liquid. So from £5,000 up to £7,500, that's liquid. Meaning it's fairly visible and real, but it's not as solid as the concrete, which should always be there. The foundation should never leave. When the nuclear war will come and go, and that concrete will still be there. The water, it may evaporate. We'd hope it wouldn't. And one day we hope the water will turn into concrete, because, you know, that's what happens in chemistry. And the top 20%, 25%, that's a gas. That's fizzing around the place. It's not structurally stable. And the reason it's fizzing around the place is we need that top 25% or whatever to be constantly invested in bets and in EV and value and whatever, right? So we're investing it. It's not real. We can't ever consider it to be real because we could lose it tomorrow quite easily, okay? So over time, I'd hope that, you know, and in fact, looking recently, this 10,000 will have grown. It should be 12,000 now. And so now I'm slightly reshaping my bankroll in my head. I've now got £6,000 worth of concrete. So 1,000 of the water has turned into concrete. Should never go. We shouldn't hit a bad run that's bad enough that concrete turns into water. If we do, perhaps it's time to start lowering our stakes. Which always sucks. I've had to do it recently with a different kind of investment, and I hated doing it, but I was just losing too much. So outside of the realm of bookie bashing, but I was uncomfortable and I just had to drop down stakes. And then, of course, I immediately started winning after that and I cursed my luck, but it's the way you got to do it. And so now the next 25%, so the next 6 to 9,000, that's the water. So the top of the gas, the bottom of the gas has turned into water from 7.5 grand to 9 grand. That's now this liquid water. And the gas is now from 9,000 to 12,000. So there's more gas, but it's still fizzy because we could lose it or we could make some more. And that's, and now now is the point that we're turning some of this gas into water and some of the water into concrete, if that makes sense. Okay? So we're making money, but this top of our bankroll, I could lose that very easily tomorrow. In fact, I have to. I have to put it at risk, betting on value. Otherwise, it's going to do nothing. It's going to sit there stagnating in a 0% bank account. What use is that going to be to anyone? The Irish Grand National was on 2nd of April. General Principle 121 SP. Plenty of extra places going on. Oh, what happened in this? I remember now. I haven't read about this, but... because I read the BBC article which talked about the winner. Folsom Blue was in fourth and Bells Hill was in fifth. I think, if I remember rightly, that those two were... yeah, they were swapped around. Folsom Blue took fourth after Bells Hill was demoted, which really sucks if you're on Folsom Blue for the extra place because you don't want them. You know, the Bells Hill... led into the final stretch, but blocked three others over the last. So was demoted from fourth to fifth, which is fantastic if you're on Bells Hill, but sucks if you're on Folsom Blue and not Bells Hill, like Duncan was. I was on both at Ladbrokes, which meant not only did I get the EP, but I got an email from Ladbrokes telling me that I'm no longer welcome to bet with them anymore. Also from Coral the next minute. Then an hour later, exactly the same email from Coral. And then the next morning, exactly the same email from Ladbrokes again. All from just having a bet on Irish racing. It's a stream of negativity of middle management saying that you bet on something that was value at Irish racing, so we're going to have to gub you, and we'll gub you at the sister's site. And the sister's site has... no idea what's going on. So 5 minutes later, we'll tell you again. And we'll tell you the next morning because we've no idea. It's exactly the same email and over again. What's happened over in Deportivo? It was 3-2 Deportivo. Marco was suspended, but I don't know why. Doesn't matter anyway. I'm not going to win anything in this match. Stupid PSG. Perhaps the smart money wasn't that smart this evening. Right, what happened in the golf? Okay. Smart money in the golf came from us. Hopefully we were doing two things. We saw value in the extra place. Oh, that's so much harder. Although the Masters has never been... we talked about this last week. The Masters has never been the easiest tournament in the world to get extra places on. I've seen a number of people moan about how... this is the worst year ever. I don't think it was. I saw Neil Channing saying that on Betting Emporium. I saw people saying over in Profit Accumulator. Just, that's not what my records show. My records show that it's never been great. And if anything, I can see a little bit more place value this year than in recent years compared. But what do I know? What do I know? I only have fully recorded Excel spreadsheets that detail the place of every bookie for the last 8 or so years. I actually went on a forum and argued with someone, and it was one of those arguments where I was always going to lose because I was using facts but I didn't use capital letters and they were using capital letters. So I don't know why I get into these stupid discussions. Honestly, I don't. I post too much and then I delete my post because I don't want to get into an argument with people that... because people, a lot of people in forums don't like facts. They just... they've remembered something wrong or just formed an opinion or like just to be negative because being negative is easier than being positive. So anyway, where am I going? We were betting on... extra places. The most amount of value I found actually was at the 888 group. Spieth's top five lay just got smashed in, I think, on the Tuesday night, 2 days before the first tee. Collapsed by about 25%. It was outrageous. And all of a sudden, it became very good value at 1-4 odds books. Mostly the 888 group, that, to be fair. I think the indie shops were as well, but I didn't have any to my disposal for the US Masters. So, yeah, Spieth became almost risk-free. I mean, we're talking pennies to win 1,000, which, given that he's one of the favourites, it's a really good chance he's going to come sixth. So, other than the 1-4 books, ended up taking, I don't know, some decent plus EV losses. So, on about 40 golfers of the 80. And took Sky and Coral to task on their 10 places. If you're going to offer me 10 places, then I'm just going to bet. It's too tempting just to get on so many. I mean, Coral had better stake limits, but Sky had better odds. So got on probably way too many at those bookmakers, but overlaying the top 10 market. So, you know, let's say Tiger Woods was, well, he wasn't, but let's just say, for example, he was 20-1 at Coral and they were paying 10 places. And then you could have a look at, so 1-5 odds, 20-1. So, what is his place? Well, it's 20 divided by 5 plus 1. So, 5.0 would be his place. And you would look at the top 10 market and he could be as low as 2.5 in there. So, if it's a 5-2.5 in the top 10 market and you're paying 0% commission, you can lay twice your place stake. So, coincidentally, that means that you get your entire bet back at the exchange. You've laid the place fully and you haven't touched the win. If he wins, you collect all of the win side of your bet from Coral or Sky. So yeah, smashed a load of golfers on them, including Leishman, who was doing very well last time I looked. He's in second position, 3 under after 10 holes of the second round. Patrick Reed is winning. McIlroy in fourth. As usual, the top five market becomes more and more predictable. This trend has been going on for a number of years. It's become even more pronounced this year. The reason this trend has become more pronounced is there are now way more layers than backers in the top five market. And that means that they are leapfrogging each other. They're holding artificially high prices, especially on the favorites, where the inefficiency of the place is less pronounced. So I monitored the price changes of the leaders from very closely from 10 p.m. the night before to all the way through to first tee, which was 1:30 p.m. UK time. So I monitored every golfer. I posted up a couple of graphs on Bookie Bashing. At the top of the market, we had Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnston, and Justin Rose. All of their lays, all 5 of 5, were lower at first tee than 10 p.m. the night before. That's 5 out of 5. Justin Rose came down from 4.6 to 4.3. Jordan came from 3.65 to 3.45. McIlroy from 4.1 to 4. He did go as low as 3.95. Dustin Johnson came all the way from 4.3 to 3.95. It's just so predictable. It's just so many layers holding up artificially high prices and then bailing coming to first tee. It's like, okay, so what are we? Is there a pattern here? I think there is. What are we going to do about it? Well, you could argue, well, maybe it just in this, the US Masters, maybe the favourites, rightfully so, got more favourite and therefore the middle of the field or the bottom of the field would have been pushed out, because in a truly efficient market, if some selections are coming in, then others will have to drift. Well, the top five came in by an average of 1.63%. So what about the top 10? So they came in by an average of 0.29. What about the top 50? They came in by an average of 0.43. What about all players? All players came in by an average of 3.49%. There wasn't even bias at the bottom of the field. If anything, it was the other way around. The bottom 10 players came in by an average of a whopping 7.52%. So if you were backing at these prices the night before and laying on the day, the difference in price you were getting for the bottom 10 was 7.52%. For all players, if you'd backed all players on average, you would have seen an improvement in price in your favour by 3.49%. So we're getting to the point now where this is so predictable, we've got to start thinking about trading, specifically the top five market, because that's where all the EP hunters like ourselves are. But one thing I was doing, I was matching the winner almost straight away to protect against drifts, but especially Tiger, who went as low as 14 and then went off at 20. So he just kept getting worse and worse. So I was matching the winner straight away, but I was leaving a lot of the top five to first tee. So that, because I kind of was convinced I was going to get a better price, and I was right. Well, now we've got to start thinking, can we start backing to back to lay the top five market? The only problem with that is it kind of messes up the nice, neat system of EP hunting, because everything's just, you know, you got all your EPs and then you're laying them and all your maths. But if we can get over that, perhaps we'll use a different exchange. It just seems like free money. Just get your backs in the night before and then lay them. For the US tees anyway, because then you've got all morning and lunchtime to for the market to settle and the layers to stop leapfrogging each other. I don't know why. Should be interesting for the British Open, how that looks. But I'll monitor every major this year and we'll analyse the prices and we'll see when this trick works and when it doesn't work. But it certainly looked as if it was very easy. It was very predictable in the US Masters, this market. So if I'm using, you know, I used Betfair this time around, but I'm really convinced that I've got to start. Like, I saw a stat that twice as much money was backed at markets, I think, at 2%. That makes all the difference in the entire world, that 2%. So I think if that's really the case, because historically I haven't used it because of reliability issues and because, as DJ goes in the water, unlucky. Is it Tiger? Oh, well, no pleasure to be had in that whatsoever. Reliability issues and liquidity issues. But seriously, it looks like the liquidity issues are well in the past if they're matching twice as much as Betfair. Talking about going in the water, did you see what happened to McIlroy yesterday? Well, for starters, did you see what happened to Tony Finau? Oh, man, don't look at that. He got a hole-in-one in the par 3 competition. Then ran down the fairway celebrating, dislocated his ankle, went over on it. The footage is harrowing. Properly went over on it. And then just stood up, clicked it back in position and went on with his day. How do you do that? Your ankle's not meant to twist in the direction that it did. I listened to a lot of value betting podcasts leading up to the Masters, and there was two consistent arguments. One, Tiger was way too short. Like, he just didn't have the putter, he didn't have the consistency. He still didn't have the distance to tackle Augusta. So it was really sort of, you know, the crowd's pushing his price down. So that proved to be correct, because he's something like four over just now. And then the other one was Sergio Garcia, who won it last year. It's been 2002 since the last back-to-back Masters winners, but it, more often than not, if you win the Masters, you're not going to contend that well the following year. I think it's just too much pressure. Well, this was the sad commentary of Sergio Garcia yesterday.
Six shot of Sergio Garcia at the 15th and a visit to the water. Pin on the front right, just up a little ridge. Oh, It's gone, I think. Just needs a bit of luck, Andrew.
That's exactly what he did with his last one. He was in with his second, he had a drop. Onto the green, spun back, and he's done it with his next one as well. Nothing is going to stop the ball on this slope today. We've seen it already. Garcia now with his 10th, he's been in the water again, and the body language tells you, oh, look at the spin on it, that is going in one place, it is heading to the turtles. Very sad, Garcia has been great, oh, it's been a good start to his defence, and it is sinking, it is disappearing, and will drop again. But Garcia has finally stayed dry. This is for a 13. Good putt is all you can say, but that's a record. That's the highest ever scored in the 15th. Crenshaw in 97 with that in 11. That's extraordinary, Ken.
This course can be so kind to you, but can be so cruel as well. What a difference a year makes.
It's one of those things. I feel like, I don't know, it's the first time in my career where I make a 13 without missing a shot. Simple as that. You know, I felt like I hit a lot of good shots, and unfortunately the ball just didn't want to stop. I don't know, you know, it's one of those things, so it's just unfortunate, but you know, it's what it is.
Damn alligator bit my hand right off! Oh man, 9 over par, 81 for Sergio Garcia. It's brutal. Okay guys, this is the Bashcast, and it's brought to you by BookieBashing.net.
Here we are all, farewell about you.
welcome back to the Bashcast. It was fun loving criminals. We are all very worried about you from the album 100% Colombian. I'm aware I've played it before, but I played it on a podcast before I had taken the production values of the Bashcast seriously, with the microphone and the editing software, so I felt it was only fair to give them a good run, to give it a proper go, that tune. In the bookie bashing news, Eric Bristow passes away, aged treble 20, which was kind of a shock. He was tweeting. He was quite active on Twitter, Eric Bristow, which we'll come back to. He was tweeting just hours before he passed away from a heart attack with his predictions. He liked to gamble quite a lot. He liked to bookie bash, whether it was negative EV or positive EV. He was tweeting his predictions for scores in the Premier League. I watched the Darts Premier League. It was very somber. The commentators didn't do a lot of commentating. So there was obvious genuine affection in both the crowd and the commentators. And let me just bring up his Wikipedia page, because I wanted to sort of say how dominant he was, but he was just a little bit before my time. I'm more of the... I came into sort of darts in the Phil Taylor era. Yeah, Google Eric Bristow. His Wikipedia page isn't on the first page of Google, which is not very normal. So, yeah, 60 years old. He would have been 61 in 2 weeks. He was ranked world number one by the World Darts Federation 6 times in 1980, 81, 83, 84, and 85, and in 1990. So he had that 5-year hiatus. Is that when he had dartitis during the Swedish Open in 1986? Bristow found himself unable to let go of the darts properly, a psychological condition known as dartitis. Footage of his career suggests the condition may have been building up gradually. His hitherto fluent throwing action had slowed in the previous year, and he struggled in 1987. He was never the same player again, but he did regain the number one ranking briefly in 1990. He mentored Phil Taylor, sponsoring him with £10,000 to fund the development of his game on the understanding that the cash would be repaid. He was on Celebrity Get Me Out of Here, finishing 4th out of 12 celebrities. I think the biggest thing, he was fired from Sky last year, and I remember that happening. I remember it was because he tweeted some inappropriate tweets. Don't get me wrong, Bristow and me are on opposite sides of, well, not opposite, but we're not on the same side of the political spectrum. I'm guessing he's a little bit right-wing. It's not that I'm left-wing, I'm more liberal, but it's certain things we wouldn't have seen eye to eye on. But I think I fell into the trap of thinking that Bristow had said a lot worse than he actually had said on Twitter. And so when he died, some people said he's sexist and racist, and I shrugged my shoulders and went, yeah, he is a bit sexist and racist. But then I saw the tweets. Okay? So this was around the news stories that were breaking a couple of years ago about football coaches and inappropriate behaviour with kids, right? So he says, so this is all on Twitter. So Eric Bristow, MBE, at Eric Bristow. So bet the rugby boys are okay, ha ha, is the first tweet. So darts players tough guys, footballers, wimps. Okay. Perhaps sensitivity is not his number one attribute. I think this is the key tweet. He says, might be a loony, but if some football coach was touching me when I was a kid... Let me just silence. If some football coach was touching me when I was a kid as I got older, I would have went back and sorted that poof out. A couple of hours later, he then said, sorry, meant pedo, not poof. Oh, that is funny, though. You have to be fairly humorless not to find that funny. And then he said, everyone that works on TV is frightened to say the truth because they are frightened to lose the job. Life shouldn't be like that. Well, to a certain degree, it should. You can't go around offending everybody all of the time. But then again, we can't wrap everyone in cotton wool. I'm not quite sure who should be offended by those series of tweets. But I think it's kind of obvious that he wasn't meaning specific insults or harm to anyone there. He was just opening his mouth and letting whatever drivel was in his head come out. And he almost was saying this, I don't know, I'm not defending it. It is wrong, but it's not bad, if that makes sense, in my eyes. And I thought what he'd said was a lot worse than that. And if that's the worst that he said, then I think... the last couple of years of his life when he was sacked by Sky Sports and seen as by someone like me as a rather unpleasant character was perhaps a little bit unfair for Eric Bristow. So there you go. That's my 10 cents on him. Ray Wilkins as well this week. Died of alcoholism, I think. Loved a beer, Ray Wilkins. 61-year-old lifted two titles in Scotland, an FA Cup, and was inducted into the English Football Hall of Fame in 2013. He was a hugely popular character on the punditry circuit. Someone said a story here, so let me just sort of see if I can succinctly repeat this. This was on Instagram. Nigel Quashy from QPR. Who said, I will always be proud to say how lucky I am to have been coached, managed, and even met you. If it wasn't for you, I would never have started my career playing football and will never forget going to Manchester United as a YTS trainee to do all the kit and boots in the changing room for the first team squad. 1 hour, 30 minutes before kickoff, you named the team and I was in it, and that's how my debut went. I didn't even get to think about it because all you said was you're number 18, here's your boots and your shin pads. Just go and play, have fun, treat it like you're over the park with your mates. My mum never had a mobile phone back then because we couldn't afford anything like that and everything went through her work or home phone. I asked you after the game if I could call home to speak to her. You said, use my mobile and call this number. It was my mum on the other end of the line. She was outside by the away team bus. I went outside to see her and asked, how did you get here? Because I knew she couldn't afford it. And she told me that Ray had got the club to pay for her train ticket to come to the game. And then told me Ray had got the club to give us our first mobile phone in life during the week. And he wanted to surprise me knowing I was making my debut. I was given a chance by Ray Wilkins, one of the legends of the game, and to this day, you're the first person I mention when it comes to football, and this will never change. You will be missed so much, not just in the football world, but as a real human being with such class. Thanks for everything, and my thoughts go to all the family. Sleep well, Sir Ray Wilkins. Hashtag Ray Wilkins. Hashtag legend. Hashtag football. Hashtag pure class. Hashtag QPR. Are there any edges anywhere?
There are edges everywhere.
Energy bet offering 750-1 that the world will come to an end in 2018. No lay market. My best advice for an edge, give that one a swerve. Football coming up, Premiership. Everton, Liverpool, Merseyside derby tomorrow lunchtime. Man City, Man United, Manchester derby tomorrow evening. Arsenal and Chelsea play on Sunday, but the game of the week, Newcastle travel to Leicester, 3 p.m. on Saturday. Champions League next week, Man City, Liverpool. Liverpool 3-0 up from the first leg. Roma, Barcelona on Tuesday as well. And the other two matches, Bayern, Sevilla and Real Juventus on the Wednesday. So lovely football in the next 6 or 7 days. Next Saturday, Grand National. 5 o'clock at Aintree. Probably not worth looking too much in depth the Thursday and the Friday up at Aintree. Load of bookies already gone 5 places. Bet365, Sky, Ladbrokes, William Hill, Sunbets, Paddy Power. I've gone 6, but 1 to 5. Coral, Black Type, 10 bet, Sporting Bet. And all of those are 5 places, 1 to 4 odds. So really decent value. There is an anti-post market up and an anti-post to be placed market up. But Total Recall, the favourite at the top of the field, 3.75 to place best price, 4.6 on the exchange. So probably no extra place value as of yet, but there will be plenty during the day on the Saturday. So that'll be a big, big extra place race at Aintree on Saturday. Hopefully the Masters does well for us as well. Whatever it is that you're betting on in the next week, do make sure it's value. This is Tom signing out. This is big.
That's the coolest fucking story I've ever heard in my entire life. That's insane. Can I hear it again? Do you have time?